This is Higher Ed Heroes with Dr. Sebastian Kempf and Dr. Alistair Stark.
Welcome to Higher Ed Heroes. My name is Seb, and as always, I'm being joined here by my wonderful colleague and friend, Al.
Hi, everyone. Our podcast is about transformative moments in the classroom. We believe that these moments when we bring the classroom to life can often be achieved by making small changes that are easy to adopt.
And that's our focus. Small things communicated in simple ways by teachers who know that these practices make a difference to their students. And our hope is that you might be able to reflect and even feel inspired to think about whether these might work in your own classrooms.
And because we know our listeners are busy and time poor, we always want to communicate these small lessons in a jargon-free way, which is why we have the Democratic Teaching Jargon Buzzer, which we hit when we hear those buzzwords that might be more at home in a teaching committee or a faculty meeting. Seb, shall we introduce this week's guest?
Absolutely, Al. Our guest today is Dr. Dan Levy, who is a senior lecturer at Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Dan, you've been working hard at Harvard in a variety of roles in relation to generative AI, sitting on policy committees, talking to faculty and workshops, and also implementing classroom practices and procedures to get the most out of AI. So let's talk about it at a general level first. There's a lot of negativity around AI. There's a lot of myths. There's a lot of storytelling and gossip about AI. But at a general level, let's talk about the possibilities. What can AI bring to the university classroom in a general sense?
I would like to begin by saying that I think AI, in particular generative AI, is going to change the way that we all work and learn. So that is even before considering the university classroom environment. I think at the university, AI has the potential to transform the way faculty teach, transform the way our students learn, transform the way our administrators do their work, and transform the way in which we all conduct research. Given this podcast, I think we could focus on the first two, the way that faculty teach and the way that our students learn.
The big changes will probably take care of themselves. So let's get into some of those classroom procedures and practices. What can AI bring to our classrooms?
So I think the first thing that I would say in terms of what a faculty member can do or an instructor can do, AI can act a little bit like a teaching assistant or teaching aide that is available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This will not necessarily substitute a human teaching assistant, but it will augment what you can do. So just to name a few possibilities, you can use generative AI and a software like ChatGPT or any other similar one to help you design a class plan. You can use ChatGPT or any other tool like that to help you come up with classroom activities. You can use it to help you come up with assignment ideas. You can use it to help you give feedback on things that you're thinking about. You can use it to give feedback to students on work that they have provided. So I think the possibilities are many, and we are, I think, in a very, very active stage of experimentation of both the opportunities and the risks with this technology.
So it's kind of a source of inspiration when you want ideas, but also a friend that you can have a conversation with and bounce ideas off. It's an electronic Seb.
I actually think this analogy with having a conversation is a very important and useful one, because I think most people, when they try generative AI at the beginning, they might say, oh, I tried this and it didn't give me what I wanted. But I think embarking on the journey as a conversation, as, hey, I'm trying to come up with a class plan to do this, and here's what I will need help on. The first response might not be one that you find very helpful, but then just like you do in a conversation, you just say, no, this is not exactly what I wanted. Here's where you fell short. and then have the tool come up again with a different version of it or with an expanded version of it is, I think, one excellent way of doing it. And the nice thing about the interaction is that it happens just like it happens between two human beings. It happens live and immediately. If you were to ask a person, hey, help me with this, they go, they do that activity, and then they come back, and then only then you can ask the next thing that you want them to do, that would take a lot longer than if you can do it in a conversation through the chat.
And of course, a human would get frustrated if you continually went back and said, no, you're getting this wrong, you're getting this wrong.
Yes.
The ChatGPT has to do what it's told.
Yes, that's one very important distinction that is true for both faculty members and for students. The AI tool has infinite patience. So the AI tool will never tell you, no, you've already asked me this. So this is very important for many relationships in our lives. But it's also true for students. In fact, one of the things that we have discovered students say about using generative AI tutor that we asked them to use last semester was students were saying, I can ask the generative AI tool anything that I want without fear of embarrassment. And that, I don't know that it would work the same if you have a student coming to your office and feeling a little bit perhaps hesitant if they don't understand something to ask you five times. Here, you can ask it five times. You can say, explain it to me. If I were a fifth grader, you can say, give me an example. I didn't understand this example. Give me another one. I didn't understand this other one. Give me five more examples. The possibilities are endless.
You started off your first response to Al by saying, hey, there's four different ways in which we can imagine AI to play a role in our classrooms. And you talked about it becoming like a buddy you can have a conversation with. And now you started talking about, oh, here is something that students can use. Is that the second?
Yes.
That you were mentioning earlier?
Yes.
Okay, take us a bit further.
Sure. So one thing that we have to keep in mind, when we are teaching a class of, say, 50 students or whatever number of students you have, not all the students have the same background on the subject. And despite our best efforts as instructors, we might try to present the material and engage the students with activities that most of them might find interesting and engaging. But some of them might feel lost because they don't have the background, or some of them might feel bored because they already have the background. I think one thing that generative AI allows is for students to be able to learn and explore in that learning, adapted to where they are, not just in terms of the background knowledge of the material, but also in terms of how they like to learn, in terms of the areas of interest to them. So just to be super concrete, suppose you ask a student to learn about a particular topic. So in my case, one classical example is I ask them to learn about signal detection theory. So that might be for some students who have no background in statistics, like very, very hard to understand. And for other students, once they understand the basic framework, they can go with it. So different students might approach this activity in different ways. So the student who has little background might say, I don't have much background in statistics, explain it to me as if I were a 10-year-old. And that same student might say, please use examples in this area that I'm interested in. Could be sports, could be medicine, whatever it is. And the other student who has a stronger background could take the conversation in a completely different direction. That's very hard to do in a classroom. So that's one thing. It helps personalized learning as a complement to what you do in the classroom, not as a substitute, but it helps personalized learning. The second thing is that when students are learning using generative AI, they do so by doing what most of us want to do when we want to learn something. They do so by asking questions. And if we ask the students to read a textbook, the student cannot really ask a question to the textbook, whereas the students can ask a question to the generative AI and can follow up on the question that it asks. So I'm not saying this is going to substitute teachers or textbooks, but I'm saying it's a useful complement on a function that I think wasn't available.
You can immediately see the application of that in, say, a postgraduate setting where you have many different nationalities, many different levels that students are beginning with in the classroom, and they need to cohere everyone together into a broad context where we're all on the same page to some extent, it seems incredibly useful, even more pragmatic. So is this literally in class? You could have them with their laptops out doing the discussion as you teach?
You could, although having all your students with a laptop in front of them in the classroom is not for the faint of heart. I was referring a little bit more to what the work you want students to do before they step into the classroom. Mm. In the classroom, I could imagine several roles, and in fact, we can talk about a tool that I helped develop that can be used in the classroom. Whether you use generative AI in the classroom, in the live interaction with the students, is something that I think is partly it's going to depend on your own preferences for technology in the classroom. My sense is that a few years from now, it'll be hard to imagine a classroom where AI is not playing some role, but at least now in the transition, that might be a little bit harder to do.
You mentioned that particular tool already. What did you develop and how do you use this for your students' learning?
I cannot claim credit for developing the tool. I work with an amazing student, former student, Gonzalo Jara, and he has a background in technology and computers. And so he helped develop a tool. I assigned myself the role in the project as the intellectual cheerleader of the project. The tool is very simple, and it allows us to do something that many of us want to do in a classroom, but I think before the advent of this technology would have been hard to do. There's this famous technique called the one-minute paper, and the basic idea is that at the end of class, we might ask our students, what did you learn, what was the confusing points, and so on. The way that we normally, traditionally have implemented this is we ask the students to take a piece of paper, they write the answer, they give it to us, we come back to our offices, we flip through some of them, and we kind of try to make sense of what is it that they learn and what happened. The way that this tool works is very simple. You might do the equivalent to the one-minute paper by pausing your class maybe 3 or 4 minutes before the end, and then you put on a QR code and ask the students any questions, but let's say for the sake of argument, what did you learn today? And then the students, with their phone, they type in their name and what they learned today. And so within seconds after the students have submitted, what students see is not a word cloud, which in some way doesn't summarize very well phrases, just puts in words, but it's actually a thematic summary of what the students did. So it says, here are the three main ideas that were submitted by the students, in parentheses with the student name, so you can even see which students contributed to this idea. So that's one thing that it does. So it summarizes main themes live in the classroom without you having to go and do it. So that immediately serves one purpose, which is if there was a very, very important theme that you didn't see reflect there, you can sort of deal with it right away. You don't have to wait until the next class. The second thing that the tool currently does, it helps you identify student quotes that meet a certain criteria. So it could be, give me an interesting quote, or it could be, give me a quote that deals with this. So if you, before entering the classroom, you know that you want to end class with a particular sort of theme or topic, you can ask the tool to help you identify. And so it shows you the student quote with their name, and then you can sort of interrogate the student and say, tell me more about this, and have a conversation about that. Were those things possible before? Yes, but they were not possible as quickly as generative AI is allowing them to make. And so that's just like one example of the many ways in which generative AI could enter the university classroom.
And that speaks to something I know you're quite passionate about, which is getting the students' learning experience in the moment across to you, which I'm kind of frightened of as a teacher, but you're you're much braver than me.
The feedback at the end of each lecture or seminar through a QR code fully displayed to the students and then have a conversation about how the learning went. So I like that a lot.
Yes.
But I agree with you. I keep them anonymized, but then I have obviously what people write,
yes,
on a Likert scale, but also in written text, and then we can identify, but I have to sift through it.
Do it yourself. Yeah. So here you don't have to. Mm-hmm. And also you can do it anonymously. The name is so that you can encourage the conversation, but you can do it anonymously.
And do you introduce generative AI to the students and talk them through it, or are they already coming with a degree of knowledge about it, or are you saying, look, in this class we have this tool, it's generative AI, this is what it's going to bring, and you're talking them through some of your thinking.
The tool is just one example of how generative AI plays in this particular classroom. This last semester, I've been trying to experiment with generative AI in asking students to use it to do the work of the course. And that's one of the things that I found most interesting, is to think about ways in which students can be nudged to use generative AI in ways that help their learning. Because let me just say, maybe we're going to get into this, but one thing at the outset, we've been talking about opportunities, and I think there are many, but I also want to recognize and acknowledge the risks. But if I could just summarize in a sentence, I think for the students, generative AI can help them learn. It can also hinder their learning. And I think the key challenge for us is, can we nudge our students to use generative AI in ways that help their learning? My sense is that to do that, we can't just leave it open, that we might want to construct deliberate design activities that allow students to see the potential of the tool to learn.
So clearly what we have to do is put up parameters and limitations to get the most out of AI and ensure that students aren't misusing it or using it in a problematic way. Other risks or investment costs in using it?
At a societal level, there are many, many risks that probably not in the scope of this podcast. So let me just acknowledge that. There are all sorts of ethical risks, privacy risks, and so on. There are existential risks. That's even more outside this podcast. And sort of focusing on teaching and learning, the main risk, I think, is that the students use the tools in a way that hinders rather than helps their learning. You mentioned that we should set limitations. Unfortunately, that's proven to be very hard to do. One, because it's very hard for us to be able to distinguish, unless, frankly, the students are very sloppy. It's very hard to distinguish something that was written by an AI tool versus something that was written by a student. More importantly, the students who want to learn through generative AI might not necessarily know how to do that in the best way possible. So I do think we can play a role in nudging them to do so. Obviously, there are many, many risks, but those risks, you can probably read about it in every single university website or publication in the world.
As you know, Dan, our podcast here, we are very, very excited about small and easy to implement changes. So I'd like to ask you about what are one or two things that, you know, some of our listeners could easily implement tomorrow using AI.
If you are an instructor or faculty member and haven't spent, say, 5 hours trying to use generative AI to either improve what you're doing in your teaching or, frankly, save time with what you're doing in your teaching, your goal for this coming month is to spend those 5 hours. Because I think nothing that we said today can really sink in until you experiment and see for yourself and practice, basically. My main tip is go and experiment and practice and see what it gives you if you want to try it from the faculty side. If I had to give, like, okay, what should you do tomorrow? Whatever teaching challenge you are facing, ask yourself, is this something where generative AI could be helpful? And then just spend a few minutes experimenting. There's a professor at the University of Sydney, Danny Liu, who just organized a conference on generative AI and teaching and who has written very, very nice things about this topic. He has a blog post, you can probably link to it, along the lines of thinking about, if you were a faculty member, ask yourself the question, if I could clone myself, what would the clone do? And I think that's a useful way of thinking about generative AI. What are the things that you right now are not doing because you have just too much other stuff to do? And by the way, some of this stuff does not even have to be in the teaching and learning realm. I'm going to give you an example quickly. I was doing something professional a couple of weeks ago, and I was going to get reimbursed for the expenses that I had. And I had been dreading the putting together this expense report and just, you know, this table with all these things. And all I had done prior to yesterday was scan the receipts, put them in a folder on my computer. And so yesterday I said, I have to do this. But I was still dreading it. And all I did was open ChatGPT, I dragged the 8 receipts, and I wrote a paragraph asking it to prepare an expense report for me with a table with all the things. So now that's not a teaching and learning use, but hopefully that saved me time that I can now spend on something related to teaching and learning or something not related to teaching and learning. So I think thinking of this tool as a way of helping you do things that you used to do before in ways that maybe you found cumbersome, I think a useful way. So it's not a teaching team tip for tomorrow, but if you have an expense report that you haven't done and
still a good tip,
you are waiting for that, that literally is what I did last night.
Before this conversation, I would say I was ambivalent, but you hooked me when you said that you can use this to have a conversation about potential teaching ideas. The whole reason we got started with this podcast is because you and I have those conversations, but we thought a lot of people don't have a friend to have those conversations with. And so if you have a blank sheet of paper, you have a teaching challenge or a course, just having that blank sheet of paper filled up with a conversation to me is priceless. That's a small, easy to implement, priceless conversation because it gives you a starting point. At some point down the road, I might replace you.
It's very comforting to hear. But as Dan, you rightly said, those questions about ethics and existential aspects are beyond the scope of this podcast. But I'm a bit similar. Like, I think what I get from you and what you were just saying, Dan, is lowering the threshold of our reservations towards engaging with it. Is that sort of...
Just experiment and see where it can be helpful and what the limitations are. Although I will warn that the limitations that you see today might not exist in the future. And I will warn, given my own experience, is that the limitations are often not of the AI tool. Limitations are of us as users who might not have necessarily communicated with the AI tool in a way that produces what we want. I don't mean to say that this is a perfect tool or anything like that, but I think if you experiment enough with it, you will see the potential to both help you do things that brainstorm, as you said, come up with ideas, but also save time in the way that you do things that right now take you a lot more time.
Dan, this is genuinely and truly wonderful. As with AI or the various tools we've been discussing here, this is a conversation that we could continue for a couple of hours, but not in the format of our podcast. But you know where to turn to continue that conversation. That could be obviously with Dan, with Ella, with me, or with, you know, your favorite ChatGPT tool around the corner. So I would like to say thank you for joining us here. If you as a listener heard anything that you like or you would like to engage further, then of course you can get in touch via our social media channels.
And as always, we look forward to your company again.